Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
What makes you lonely?
I'm alone. I am not lonely. You?
Are you lonely?
That's a clip from the movie Heat, featuring Robert De Niro and Amy Brenneman. It begs the question, have you ever been alone but not lonely? Have you ever felt lonely in a crowded space? Is your idea of loneliness defined by characters you see on screens, like De Niro or Don Draper on Mad Men? Graphic novelist Kristen Radke set out to tackle those questions. Her latest book is called CQ, A Journey Through American Loneliness. In it, Kristen combines evocative artwork with intimate and thoughtful prose. The result is a comprehensive cultural history of loneliness in this country. Kristen herself was born in Green Bay, but currently lives in New York City, so she's well aware that those two distinct areas can lead to different kinds of loneliness. Kristen joins us now to share dispatches from what she learned on her journey through American loneliness and why she decided to take it.
I can't really remember the moment that I became interested in loneliness. I just became, I guess, like slowly obsessed. I started writing about loneliness in 2016, which I think was a lonely year for a lot of people. And I was also, through my research later, I learned that loneliness traditionally spikes at three ages, your late 20s, your mid 50s, and your 80s. And I was in my late 20s. So it was sort of this moment of transition. And I think I was just thinking about isolation and then kind of accidentally started researching and studying it.
How did you come up with the title CQ?
So CQ comes from ham radio. So when my dad was a kid, I learned in adulthood he was really into ham radio. And when you make out a call on amateur radio, either using your voice or using Morse code, you make what is called a CQ call, the letters C and Q. And that just means you're kind of reaching out to anyone who's there, anyone who's listening can answer. It's kind of just like a call out to across the waves for anyone to answer. And over time, people took the letters CQ to stand for Seek You. And that's how the title came to be.
Yeah, it's a great title. That works perfectly. How did the arrival of the pandemic in 2020 affect your writing and illustrating?
It's a great question. I think time will tell. I do feel like a massive imposed isolation where we were kind of all under the same guidelines and we all had to be separate from each other in the same way if we were taking it seriously. Is different than the concerns of chronic loneliness. And so I think it was easier for us to talk about because we were really all in the same boat. But in a regular year, loneliness is one of the reasons I think we don't talk often about loneliness is because it feels shameful or personal. And the pandemic really destigmatized loneliness. I think it remains to be seen whether or not that will continue to be the way that we look at loneliness or not.
I'm curious about your creative process. What do you come up with first, the illustrations or the writing?
Usually the writing. I usually come up with the writing first. I'll write a little bit and then start to draw from there because when I do draw, it does kind of change my relationship to the text because I might be able to draw something that I'd written and then I don't need to say that anymore. Or the drawing may bring up, you know, some new questions that I have about the text.
What kinds of things did you do visually to convey loneliness to your readers?
It's not so much tricks as it was about like trying to override my default, which is like sometimes I would do things like I'd be like, I can't draw another person alone in an empty room. You know, like there were certain like visual tics I think I had to override in order to create a book that was like varied and was approaching loneliness visually from different ways.
Was that tough to do to overcome your visual tics?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's one of the things that just kind of happens slowly over time. Like you just have these holes you're not really sure how to fill. And then all of a sudden, you know what's supposed to go there. And it kind of feels like a miracle.
Yeah. You grew up in rural Wisconsin and then you moved to New York City. How did being suddenly surrounded by so many strangers affect your feelings of loneliness?
It's an interesting question. And I don't totally know. I mean, I did find I was a pretty lonely kid. I think a lot of children are lonely. I think there's like something kind of alienating about being a kid because you're kind of trying to figure out your place in the world and what your life is going to look like, which I think is a kind of painful, lonely moment. And in I So I don't know. I mean, I think I'd always kind of loved cities and always gravitated towards cities. And I really love Wisconsin. I come back and visit a lot. But I think it didn't feel like a jarring transition in terms of loneliness. I mean, I think any time anyone moves, there is kind of that period where you're trying to get your feet on the ground. And when I interviewed people for this book about loneliness, a lot of people cited a move, like a geographical move, as one of their loneliest moments.
Yeah, that would make sense because, yeah, as you alluded to, there's this sense of dislocation and starting all over again in a different environment. Yeah, I was really struck by this sentence that you wrote in the book. Perhaps we see loneliness in others simply to feel less lonely ourselves. Can you explain what you mean?
Sure. I mean, I think when I started this project, it was because I was observing people who were alone in public settings, which is something you can really do a lot in New York. I mean, people in New York spend a great deal of time alone, and then you're kind of stuck together in these spaces like the subway or in, you know, restaurants where a lot of people are eating alone, which is something I didn't see a lot of in Wisconsin. I think we tend to gather in a different way. One of the reasons that I think loneliness is so painful is because it feels as though you're the only one feeling it. Like you feel alone while everyone else is connected, which is of course not true. It's a complete fallacy. But I think I do feel like writing a book about loneliness made me a less lonely person because I came to understand how prolific loneliness is, how universal it is, how many people experience it, which is pretty much everyone. And I think that there's something about that kind of destigmatizes it for us and helps us feel a little bit more connected.
Well, that makes total sense. What is the difference between aloneness and loneliness?
Well, solitude and loneliness are often conflated and they're not the same thing. Like someone can spend a lot of time alone and never feel lonely, and someone can be in very crowded spaces all the time and feel alone. You know, it's the old cliche of like never felt more alone than in a crowded room. But solitude is just a state of being, and loneliness is more of a state of mind. So every single person has a built-in biological threshold for how much loneliness or aloneness that they can tolerate. And so certain people are more predisposed to loneliness than others, which is why a lot of people can live alone and feel completely content, and why someone else maybe needs to have a lot more interaction. It's a little bit related to like introversion and extroversion.
Mm-hmm. How hazardous can loneliness be to our health?
Loneliness is extremely dangerous for our health. And when I say loneliness, I'm talking about chronic loneliness, so experiencing loneliness for a period of over 7 years. But chronic loneliness is surprisingly detrimental to our health. It's one of the things I didn't expect to learn when I began this book, but it was startling. I mean, so in certain studies that have been conducted on people who identify as lonely and people who don't, people who identify as lonely tend to die 7 years sooner than people who identify as socially fulfilled. At first, it was believed that, well, if you live alone or if you spend a lot of time alone, it was called the social control hypothesis, that if you live alone or you spend a lot of time alone, there's no one there to be like, don't eat that cheeseburger, or like, we should go for a walk, or like, you should get some sleep. Like there's someone there kind of policing your habits. But over time they discovered that the disparity in life expectancy between people who spent a lot of time alone and people who didn't was too significant to attribute it just to those kinds of individual behaviors. So our bodies are actually just less effective when we're feeling disconnected.
How did the arrival of the internet affect the way you personally experienced loneliness?
You know, I was born in the late 80s, so I was one of those people who early in my life didn't really have the internet. And then as I was kind of coming like into preteen era, you know, when I was 11 or 12 or 13, the internet really became a part of my life. And it did really change my relationship to the world. Like my relationship to like chat rooms or like early blogs or something like that gave me, you know, access to people far outside of where I lived, in the same way that like my dad calling out on ham radio as a kid in the 70s gave him access to a kind of a network of strangers. And so there's a lot of talk about like what the internet does to us in terms of isolation and how it positions us against the world or makes it difficult for us to connect with one another. I think a lot of that kind of remains to be seen how true some of that will be. But for me, I think as a kid, it did really help me feel more connected.
You write very eloquently about media coverage and its relationship with loneliness. And you talk about television's portrayal of male protagonists like Mad Men's Don mm-hmm. Draper and The Wire's Jimmy McNulty. How does TV's portrayal of these kinds of characters influence the way we think about loneliness?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think one of the things I was investigating in this book was America's relationship to loneliness and how it depicts loneliness sort of through media, through our storytelling, because that's so much of how we understand the world is by the stories that we're told. And that happens, you know, since childhood. And so to me, I see those characters as just renditions of cowboys. Like the cowboy myth is a huge part of American ideology. And it's all predicated on someone being alone. Like it's a man who rides up into the sunset by himself. And there's something very like alluring about that character. And I think that it's also wrapped up in like ideas of American individualism, which I think are equally dangerous. But it sort of creates this character that isn't entirely realistic, but it also it prizes individualism and isolation in sort of an alluring, attractive way that I think is a little bit dangerous to the way that we should actually relate to one another.
The subtitle of your book is A Journey Through American Loneliness, and it makes me wonder, how does American loneliness differ from loneliness in other countries? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, so America is not the loneliest country in the world, but it is up there. So there are other countries that experience high levels of loneliness, like England, certain countries in Scandinavia, Japan. But we are one of the loneliest countries in the world, and I think we haven't done a lot of work to figure out why and figure out how to bring each other closer together. And, you know, like in the UK, they've been anointed like a minister of loneliness, and they have a lot of outreach programs and stuff like that for people who are experiencing isolation. In America, we haven't really done that work. But it is quite interesting to look at the causes of loneliness and how they differ across the world.
Emily Dickinson has one of the best definitions of loneliness ever. Can you tell us what it is and what it means to you?
Yeah, Emily Dickinson called loneliness the horror not to be surveyed, which is very beautiful. I mean, I also like the word horror when talking about loneliness because biologically our brains actually respond to isolation in the same way we respond to a physical threat. Like our brains can't differentiate between the feelings of loneliness and feeling in immediate danger.
Really?
And the reason is because when we are lonely, we are like in the grand scheme of human history, it was very dangerous to be alone. Particularly when we were hunters and gatherers, we needed each other as backup to survive. So when we now live in a culture where we spend a lot, maybe we don't have those same wildlife dangers on the day-to-day, but we spend a great deal of time alone, that's one of the reasons we enter those dangerous states where our brain is putting out too many stress hormones, and then that causes a lot of health problems. But I like Emily Dickinson's definition because it's talking too about how loneliness is so much about being seen, about being observed, about being witnessed. And mm-hmm. I think that's so much of what we need as human beings to feel safe, is to feel seen by someone.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're absolutely right. And you have this great sentence that riffs off of Emily Dickinson's quote. You write, "In childhood, we are often more surveilled than surveyed." I love this sentence.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I was talking about with the loneliness of childhood. Like, in childhood, you can't really make decisions for yourself. I mean, of course, everyone has different levels of independence in childhood. But you know, your life is sort of made up of decisions that other people have made for you, which makes you feel not whole or not, you know, and it's a necessary thing. You know, you're a kid, you're not a fully formed, your brain isn't fully formed yet. You need those social structures that are sort of putting you in place to keep you safe. But it doesn't mean that's not also an isolating experience.
The writer Olivia Lang has said that loneliness is a gift. Do you agree?
I do. I think, and I loved that. I loved her book, The Lonely
it's
City.
A great book.
I think that, yeah, it's beautiful. I think that loneliness is essential. It's important. Like loneliness has a very important biological purpose, which is that when we feel alone, we feel threatened, and then we need to reach out to another person. We need to get back, you know, in a group. And that's really important. And if we don't feel that impulse, it's kind of like, you know, if you don't feel pain, you don't know if the stove is hot, you continue to burn your hand. It's the same thing. I mean, it's a sort of a biological warning bell. So it is a very important thing that we feel. We just need to learn to listen to it.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Thank you for making that. Kristen Radke, thank you very much for joining us. It was great to talk to you, and congratulations on CQ.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kristen Radke is the author and illustrator of CQ, A Journey Through American Loneliness. Find out more at WPR.org/beta. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Ishmael Reed, Megan Abbott, and Kristen Radke. If you want to hear it again or catch up on past episodes, Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Just search for WPR and Beta. And you can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta or on Twitter at WPRBeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions. Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
You all have had the chance and the privilege to be enchanted, transported, and even sometimes devastated by the performances of this true artist of our company.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
But it's not like he's all warm and fuzzy.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
Surprise yourself so you can surprise the audience. Transcendence. And very few have it in them.